As the war with Iran continues, and of course the numerous repeated claims of a win by the U.S. are made, the entire matter is seen as something that's over there. Well, is that accurate? Has the war gotten closer to America than some believe? Well, there are some who are growing to believe it has, and they turn to the recent series of cyber attacks against U.S. water systems, as an increasing number of states as proof of that. My first guest today joins us to explain how these attacks are being done, whether they endanger U.S. water supplies, and the ways they alert those whose responsibility it is to oversee these systems. He is a cybersecurity expert, CEO of Vigilant, Chris Nyheis. How are you today, Chris?
Doing great, Chris. Thanks for having me on.
And learn more about the services of Vigilant, vigilantnow.com. We do have the link at our homepage. Well, I guess, Chris, when if you're the enemy looking for targets, water systems in America are pretty much out there and easy to find. There's 150,000 different systems, all different sizes. But by and large, I guess maybe a rare exception, they all operate off of what's called a programmable logic controller system, which I'm doing the background for this segment. And made me think back to the movie The China Syndrome, when you looked at all the machinery that was going on, the hardware and people manning consoles. It's not that way anymore, is it?
It's not that way anymore, no. And you know, the PLC, if you think about it, just for your listeners, you know, we all have thermostats in our house that are connected to our furnaces, and we can connect them remotely through apps now. We don't even have to be home to connect it. It's very similar to what you were saying there, is that, you know, in the past, we had to be at our house to set that thermostat. Now you don't have to, right? You can set it through Nest or whatever. And it's the exact same thing. So think of the like a thermostat-like device, but on a water system control, like a valve or, you know, some sort of, you know, just a control that controls the chemicals that come in. Those used to all be manual. Everyone was sitting at a screen. Now they can connect to it remotely through modems or internet connections or things like that.
And that goes into something else I found in researching, too. There are different ways to attack these systems to the point where if you're monitoring, as you detailed, you could see everything, all the levels, all the meters looking fine, but the attack that's going on makes that observer or supervisor blind to what's really going on.
Oh, 100%. Now, you know, I started my career, this is not a new thing. This has been going on for decades. I started my career in IT and cyber at a frozen food warehousing company, and a lot of supply chain of frozen food goes through those organizations. And we saw attacks 20 years ago where attackers were trying to open up valves to release ammonia into the atmosphere, right, which can melt people's lungs and things like that. So, you know, it's not very good either. And so in those cases, you know, for the last decades here, you know, these attackers have been really honing in their skill on misinformation, right? So, you know, they can make a cyber detection technology, or they can make a screen, show one thing, but really it's showing something else. And the reason they can do that is because when you control these PLCs, you're controlling the information coming in and out of them, and you can make it look like whatever you want to.
I'm not saying this to put the hammer down on operators of smaller systems, but it's a safe assumption that those who operate in more rural areas might not have the experience, the knowledge, the awareness that someone even in a large city has, but even those larger systems are under attack too. So seems like this is really exposing a lot of vulnerabilities in the water plant systems.
It is, yeah. I mean, we as a nation, there's a book called The Bomber Mafia, that's a fascinating book, but it talked about the war effort in World War II and how, you know, we as a country realized that if we could take out the ball bearing plants in Germany, we could shut down their entire war effort, because ball bearings, the same ball bearings were in tanks and trucks and their guns and their airplanes. So we started attacking their ball bearing plants. And whenever you conduct warfare, you just need to look at a couple things. What's the easiest way to shut down the war machine? Or two, what's the easiest way to cause chaos for the people, you know, that are behind that war machine? And when you look at things like water systems, you look at ammonia control systems, you look at all the things that control just our food delivery, you know, we're fairly vulnerable in that, because to what you just said. You know, it's, you know, in our, a lot of these are rural areas. It isn't that the skill set of these technicians are lower. It's that they don't have the resources. You know, it might be one person manning an entire water district. A lot of the cyber technology that exists today, I would say, is not as effective as it was 15 years ago. I think we're actually less effective in a lot of the cyber tech that's out there. And so a lot of the ways to detect and understand and see these attacks have been diminished. And I'll even say this, the attacks that are happening against these districts are not always sophisticated attacks. You know, they're general attacks that take place. It's just the protections or, you know, the you know, even like with this, a lot of these PLCs are connected directly to the internet. And so, you know, if you can get to these old antiquated systems directly on the internet, it's not a hard effort for an attacker to do something like this.
Dr. Chris Nyheis, who is CEO of Vigilant, VigilantNow.com, their website, and you are listening to Issues and Ideas. Do other facilities operate with the base of the programmable logic controllers, things like electric grids or even nuclear power plants?
They do. They do. And you know, in this case, especially with the, you know, just recent attacks against the two water districts, which you know, were not named publicly yet, and I agree with that approach by the state. But you know, a lot of the attacks, it wasn't, you know, what we're starting to hear come out of it was it wasn't you know, attacks against the software, you know, which was what originally was thought. It's just more attacks against the you know, these directly connected systems. And so, you know, there are, you know, these systems are everywhere. And they're mostly connected because people are trying to get to them remotely, you know.
And you mentioned how the more rural areas don't have the tools they need, and you would think that they would turn to the federal government, because there is an agency, Cybersecurity Infrastructure Security Agency, which unfortunately had significant staff cuts in the return of the current administration. I'm thinking back in my radio past when the computers first came into the studios. We kept the CDs in the studio because if the computer crashed, we needed to have the backup. Do these facilities that rely on the PLCs, do they have a backup system? Or if the PLC goes down, then that's all, folks?
It all depends. Some, and this goes back down to resources. Some of these PLCs are 15, 20 years old. You know, some are older, you know. And so in some cases, you can't get backups. Right. You know, backup devices. And so they may have a few sitting around. In some cases, you have newer ones and you have that. What a lot of these facilities have to do is really have, you know, primary detection capability. You know, you got to remove these from the internet. You got to figure out a different way to get to these systems to control them. Right. And that's one of the recommendations from the FBI that's coming out. And I'll say New Jersey has a really phenomenal cyber response unit, and they did an amazing job in this. So kudos to you all on that. But you know, they have to remove those things. But then they also need to have the ability to fall back to manual effort because all of these systems can be run manually. And that is what happened in a lot of these cases, like especially in these two recent ones. You know, water service wasn't disrupted. But I will point out that from what we're seeing come out of this, and especially across, you know, the more than 300 attacks we've seen across water districts here recently, is that it wasn't the detection systems that found the threat. It was that the attacker was changing IP addresses or making themselves known, which is a very interesting fact about this, because if an attacker wants to come in and disrupt the United States water districts or things like that, or do something even more nefarious like poison water, they're not going to make themselves known as easily as these attackers did. And there's something to that.
And it's important to know, too, in New Jersey, as you mentioned, we had a good response because one amazing small area in the northwest part of the state supplies water for two-thirds of the state. So if that's unnamed, but I think, I mean, for you listening, I think you kind of know what we're talking about. But for that officially unnamed source, if that goes, that just shows the magnitude of how a small attack can have a lasting impact. Talk about Vigilant and the services you provide.
Yeah, so we do cyber warfare, you know, and we do cyber warfare efforts down to in organizations like water districts, like you know, manufacturing, healthcare, you know, across the gamut. The way in which we do that is we have technology that can deploy into company environments as a physical device, and then we create a you know, we collect a lot of data from within inside an infrastructure, and then we can pull data from 155 other data sources that are out there. So pretty much anything anyone can send data to us, we can collect. And if we don't have the ability, we can add that within 2 hours. So we take all that information together. We have a security operations team that constantly is looking at that information and assisting our clients in finding threats. And we're the industry average right now is about 287 days to find a threat, which means that hackers can be inside of an infrastructure for almost, you know, 9-11 months. We're able to find them in about 4 hours. So it's much, much faster.
Find out more at VigilantNow.com. Chris Nyheis, thanks so much for helping us understand that this is not something to brush off. It is something that needs to be responded to, and hopefully those who are responding will have the tools they need from people like yourself and others. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, for sure. Can I add one more data point that I think would be important to your listeners?
Absolutely.
You have an extra second? So there's a couple of things here, and this is what we always tell people is, you know, one of the things that when we're in war, and in the United States is not used, you know, the United States public is not used to being in war, like you said at the beginning, we're not used for it being here. And one of the things that when we're ever in war is a war tactic by someone we're in war with will try to do is to create fear and chaos. And that's a very important thing to be aware of, is especially with water, it scares us. And in these cases, they didn't poison water systems. They didn't even try to take it down. They just tried to, you know, adjust. You know, they actually even made themselves known, right? And so that generally is a tactic of that fear tactic, right, when we see it. So, you know, it is important to be aware that water can, that we're vulnerable in these situations, but know that. The other thing is we have to be really careful attributing it to an attack group specifically. So, like, in this case, we are very quick to say it was Iran. And in cyber attacks, one of the things you want to do the last, and in most cases you never can actually get to, is who actually did it. Because it's extremely easy to make what you're doing look like it's someone else. And, you know, it's in this case, we have to be really careful to attribute it to Iran, because it's highly likely, in my opinion, that it's probably not them. And it's probably someone else that's trying to drive us as a public into war deeper, right? And so we just need to be really careful when we see these attacks come out and attributing them to a specific country, because it literally, like, this type of attack could have been carried out by one person sitting at their house in Italy, if they wanted to, right? So this isn't, and they could make it look exactly like it was coming from Iran, or they can make it look like it was coming from the U.S. So I think as a country, we have to be better at understanding that, you know, how warfare works, but also understanding that we need to try to take a lot of the emotion out of what's happening. So,
and you can even add to it, there could be someone who is sympathetic for, in this case, Iran, or it could be someone who's seeing the opportunity and the door opening, as you would, to make things better for, pick your actor, Russia, China, any of the above. Mm-hmm. But there could be a connection between all these. Mm-hmm. But as you point out, and you told us here, figure out the what first before you get to the why. Mm-hmm. And then, you know,
exactly right.
It's prioritizing. That, again, is what Vigilant helps people understand, too. Thanks again, Chris.
Yeah. Oh, my pleasure. Thank you. Have a good day.